A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been looking at recommended retail prices and wondering whether they actually mean anything. When a seller shows you a product marked down from the RRP, they're making a big deal of the discount. But when they're charging above it, suddenly the RRP disappears from the listing entirely. So the question is, does the RRP hold any real value as an estimate of what something is worth? And when sellers go below it, are they actually taking a hit, or is that just theater? Is below RRP pricing a genuine signal that you're getting a deal, or is something more subtle going on?
This is one of those questions where the answer is basically yes and also no, and also it's worse than you think. The RRP, or MSRP, in the American market, manufacturer's suggested retail price, is essentially a psychological anchor with some supply chain mechanics bolted on. And the behavioral economics here is genuinely fascinating.
That's the thing where you see a number first, and everything else gets judged against it.
And the RRP is a masterclass in anchoring because it's a number the manufacturer puts into the world that may or may not reflect anything about what the product actually costs to make, distribute, or sell. The classic study on this is Tversky and Kahneman's work from the 70s. They showed that even completely arbitrary numbers, spun on a wheel in front of participants, would anchor their subsequent estimates. Now imagine that instead of a random wheel, the anchor is printed on the box by the company that made the thing. It carries a veneer of authority.
The veneer of authority. That's a good phrase. The price tag equivalent of a white coat.
There's a reason retailers fought so hard to keep MSRPs visible, even when discounting became the norm. The anchor makes the discount legible. If I tell you this toaster is $50, but today it's $39.99, the $39.99 feels like a win. If I just put the toaster out at $39.99 with no reference price, you have to do the work of figuring out whether that's good. And most people won't.
The RRP is doing the cognitive labor for you. It's saying, here is the expensive version of this decision, and here is the cheaper version you get to feel smart about choosing.
And the key insight from the behavioral economics literature is that this works even when you know it's happening. Even when people are explicitly told the anchor is arbitrary, it still pulls their estimates. There's a meta-analysis from 2015 that looked at something like 60-plus anchoring studies and found the effect is remarkably robust. You can't think your way out of it.
Which makes the RRP a kind of magic trick, where the magician explains the trick and the audience still applauds.
And the FTC has actually weighed in on this over the years. There was a big case in the early 2000s. The FTC charged several major record companies with artificially inflating CD prices by using minimum advertised pricing policies. The argument was that the MSRP was being used not as a suggestion, but as a coordination mechanism.
Wait, so the record labels were using the RRP to keep prices high across the board?
The FTC's case was that they were restraining competition in the CD market by preventing retailers from advertising below certain price points. The settlement required them to stop those practices for several years. What's interesting is that this wasn't about the actual transaction price. It was about the advertised reference price. The whole system depended on the RRP being visible so the discount looked meaningful.
The RRP was the load-bearing wall of the pricing strategy. Remove it, and the whole discount narrative collapses.
And that brings us to the second part of the prompt, the question of whether below RRP pricing actually means the seller is taking a margin hit or running a loss leader. The short answer is, almost never.
So when I see something marked down from $100 to $70, the seller is still making money?
In the vast majority of cases, yes. The RRP is typically set well above the wholesale cost. A common rule of thumb in retail is that the wholesale price is roughly 40 to 50% of the MSRP, sometimes even less for categories like apparel or cosmetics. So if a jacket has an MSRP of $200, the retailer might have paid $60 to $80 for it. Selling it at 40% off, $120, still leaves them with a healthy margin.
The discount isn't the retailer being generous, it's the retailer being less aggressive.
The RRP is the ceiling of what they think they can get away with, not the floor of what they need to survive. And in many categories, the RRP is deliberately inflated to create discount headroom. The furniture industry is notorious for this. You'll see a sofa with an MSRP of $3,000 that's perpetually on sale for $1,800. Nobody has ever paid $3,000 for that sofa. The MSRP is a fiction designed to make the real price feel like a steal.
The perpetual sale. The going out of business sign that's been in the windows since 2008. There's a whole aesthetic of false urgency.
There's a study from the Journal of Retailing that found that presenting a product with a higher reference price, even an implausibly high one, increased consumers' willingness to pay by something like 15 to 20%. The anchor does the work regardless of credibility.
What about actual loss leaders? The prompt asks specifically about whether below RRP pricing signals a loss leader. When do those actually happen?
Loss leaders are real, but they're much rarer than consumers think. The classic examples are things like rotisserie chickens at Costco, which are famously sold below cost. They lose money on every chicken, but it draws people into the store where they'll buy higher margin items. Milk and eggs at grocery stores sometimes operate this way too, but these are strategic, deliberate losses on specific items designed to drive traffic.
They're usually not signaled by an RRP comparison. The rotisserie chicken doesn't have a manufacturer's suggested price printed on it.
Loss leaders tend to be priced transparently low. The value is obvious without needing an anchor. The RRP comparison is a different tool for a different job. It's about making the discount legible, not about actually losing money.
When I see a product with a slashed RRP, the most likely scenario is that the RRP was set high enough that the discounted price is still profitable, and the anchor is there to make me feel like I'm winning.
That's the baseline. But it gets more complicated when you look at how RRPs are actually set. Because they're not just pulled out of thin air, there's usually some logic, even if it's not the logic consumers assume.
Okay, walk me through that. What goes into setting an RRP?
First, the manufacturer has to consider their own costs, materials, labor, R&D, manufacturing overhead, plus a margin. Then they add the distributor and retailer margins on top. The RRP is often calculated as a multiple of the manufacturing cost, typically somewhere between 2.5 to 5 times, depending on the industry.
There is a cost basis. It's not completely arbitrary.
There's a cost basis, but the multiplier varies enormously and includes a lot of strategic padding. The manufacturer also has to consider positioning. If you're Apple, your pricing signals premium quality and you don't really do discounts. The price is the price. If you're a mid-tier consumer electronics brand, your MSRP might be set high specifically so that Amazon and Best Buy can show a discount. The discount is part of the product strategy from day one.
The RRP as a marketing budget line item.
And then there's channel management. If you're a manufacturer selling through multiple retailers, the RRP helps prevent a race to the bottom. Without it, retailers might undercut each other until nobody's making money and your brand looks cheap. The RRP gives everyone a reference point and, in some cases, a contractual floor. Minimum advertised pricing policies. MAP policies are common, where the manufacturer says you can't advertise below a certain price, even if you're willing to sell for less.
The RRP is also a coordination device, not just for consumers, but for the supply chain itself.
And this is where it gets interesting from an economics perspective. The RRP sits at the intersection of behavioral psychology, supply chain logistics, and competition policy. It's doing three jobs simultaneously, anchoring consumers, coordinating retailers, and signaling brand position. Any one of those functions would make it useful. All three together make it nearly universal.
The prompt's core question is about whether it represents actual value. And based on what you're saying, the answer is, it represents a value, but not the value the consumer thinks it does.
The RRP tells you something about how the manufacturer wants the product to be positioned. It tells you something about the margin structure of the industry. It does not tell you what the product is worth to you, or what a fair price would be, or whether you're getting a good deal.
How should a consumer actually evaluate whether a price is fair? If the RRP is unreliable, what's the alternative?
This is the practical question, and I think there are a few approaches. One is to ignore the RRP entirely and look at the market price. what are multiple sellers actually charging for this item right now? Price comparison tools make this easier than it used to be, though you have to watch out for algorithmic pricing shenanigans where sellers coordinate through software.
The robots have learned to collude.
It's a real concern. There have been cases where competing sellers use the same pricing algorithm, and it effectively becomes a price-fixing mechanism without any explicit agreement. But that's a tangent. The point is, the market price, what people are actually paying, is a better signal than the RRP.
Even the market price can be distorted. If everyone's using the same inflated anchor, the market price might just be a slightly less inflated version of the same fiction.
That's fair. Another approach is to look at historical pricing data. Camel, camel. Camel, camel for Amazon, Keepa, tools like that. They show you the price history of a product over time. If something is perpetually on sale, you can see that pattern. If the current discount is unusual, you can see that too.
The price history as a lie detector for the RRP.
And for bigger purchases, there's the old-fashioned approach of understanding the cost structure. What does it actually cost to make something like this? What are the raw materials? What's the labor component? You don't need to build a full cost model, but having a rough sense of whether a $1,000 sofa is reasonable or absurd helps you calibrate.
That's a lot of work for a toaster.
Which is why most people rely on heuristics, brand reputation, reviews, the feel of the thing in the store. And those heuristics are exactly what the RRP is designed to exploit. The anchor slips in under your rational defenses.
We're back to the magic trick. Knowing how it works doesn't make it stop working.
Knowing helps at the margins. It doesn't make you immune, but it might make you pause. That pause is valuable. The moment where you think, wait, is this discount real or is the anchor doing its thing? That moment is where better decisions happen.
Let me ask you about a specific scenario. The prompt mentions that when sellers are charging above RRP, the comparison magically vanishes. Why does that happen, and what does it tell us?
This is one of my favorite dynamics, because it's so transparent. When a product is in high demand and short supply, think concert tickets, limited edition sneakers, a new game console at launch, the market price goes above the MSRP. At that point, the MSRP becomes a liability for the seller. Showing it would highlight that you're paying a premium.
The RRP is only useful to the seller when it makes them look generous. The moment it would make them look greedy, it disappears.
And this reveals the fundamental asymmetry. The RRP is not a neutral piece of information. It's a marketing tool that is deployed selectively. If it represented fair value, it would be equally relevant whether the seller was above or below it. The fact that it vanishes when inconvenient tells you everything about whose interests it serves.
The RRP is fair weather friend to the consumer.
This is particularly visible in markets with scarcity. The sneaker resale market is a perfect case study. Nike sets an MSRP for a limited release, say $200. The shoes sell out instantly and appear on resale platforms for $600. The reseller never mentions the MSRP. It's irrelevant. The market price is what people will pay, and the MSRP was just the entry fee for the lucky few who've got in early.
The MSRP in that case functions almost like a lottery ticket price. It's not the value of the shoes, it's the price of a chance to buy the shoes at below market value.
That's a brilliant framing, and it connects to something the behavioral economists call transaction utility, the pleasure or pain you feel from the deal itself, separate from the actual consumption value of the product. When you get the sneakers at MSRP, you feel like you've won, even though you just paid $200 for shoes. The transaction utility is enormous because the market price anchor is now $600.
So, there are two kinds of value happening simultaneously. The actual utility of owning the thing, and the psychological utility of feeling like you got a deal.
And retailers know this. That's why the RRP anchor is so powerful. It creates transaction utility out of thin air. You're not just buying a toaster. You're buying a toaster and also the feeling of having outsmarted the system.
Which is a product with basically infinite margins.
The feeling costs nothing to produce and generates real willingness to pay.
What about the cases where the RRP does reflect something real? Are there industries where it's actually a decent guide?
There are a few. In highly competitive, low-margin industries, the RRP tends to be closer to the actual market price because there's less room for discounting headroom. Groceries are a decent example. The margin on packaged goods is often thin enough that the spread between MSRP and street price isn't huge. Consumer electronics in mature categories, think basic laptops, standard TVs, also tend to have tighter spreads because competition has squeezed out the padding.
The RRP becomes more honest as the market becomes more brutal.
That's one way to put it. When margins are thin and competition is fierce, there's less room for the RRP to be a fiction. It has to approximate reality because reality is sharp-elbowed.
On the other end of the spectrum, where are the most egregious RRP fictions?
Fashion and luxury goods are the classic example. A handbag with an MSRP of $2,000 that costs $80 to manufacture. The entire pricing structure is about positioning, not cost. Jewelry is similar. The MSRP on a diamond ring might be 3 or 4 times what the retailer actually expects to sell it for, because the discount is part of the romance of the purchase. Anything where the purchase is infrequent enough that consumers don't have a good reference price.
The infrequency point is interesting. If I buy a mattress once a decade, I have no intuition for what one should cost. The anchor has more power.
And the mattress industry exploits this ruthlessly. Every mattress is on sale all the time from an MSRP that nobody has ever paid. The entire industry runs on transaction utility.
The mattress industry as a transaction utility farm.
That's the one-line summary, yes.
If I'm understanding the full picture, the RRP is a behavioral anchor that creates the perception of a discount. It's set strategically with generous headroom. Sellers hide it when it's inconvenient, and in most cases, the discounted price is still profitable. The RRP is not a lie, exactly, but it's not the truth either. It's a story.
It's a story, and like all good stories, it works because we want to believe it. The desire to feel like we've gotten a deal is powerful. The RRP gives us permission to buy by framing the purchase as a win.
The permission to buy. That's the real product.
I think that's right. The RRP is an enabler. It reduces the friction between desire and purchase by reframing the transaction as savvy rather than indulgent.
This connects to something the prompt was getting at. The question of whether below RRP pricing conveys genuine value or something more nuanced. It sounds like the answer is, it conveys a story about value that may or may not correspond to reality, but the story itself has real economic effects because it changes behavior.
And the nuance is that genuine value is more subjective than we like to think. If the transaction utility, the good feeling from the deal, is real to the consumer, then in some sense the discount is creating real value, even if the numbers are fictional. You're paying less than the anchor, and that feels good, and feelings are real even when their causes are constructed.
The RRP is a placebo that actually works.
A placebo that works, but also a placebo that costs you money you might not have spent otherwise. The net effect depends on whether the purchase was a good idea in the first place. If the RRP anchor pushed you into buying something you didn't need, the transaction utility is cold comfort.
The best deal is still no deal if you didn't need the thing.
That's the part that's hardest to internalize. The anchor doesn't just affect how you feel about the price. It affects whether you buy at all. A study from the Journal of Consumer Research found that implausibly high anchors still increased purchase intentions, even when consumers acknowledged the anchor was unrealistic. The pull is that strong.
What's the practical takeaway here? If you're a consumer trying to make good decisions, what do you do with all this?
I think there are a few principles. First, treat the RRP as a data point about the seller's aspirations, not about the product's value. It tells you where the seller wants to position the item, not what it's worth. Second, look at the market price across multiple sellers and over time. Third, for significant purchases, try to understand the underlying cost structure, not in detail, but enough to know if the numbers are in the right ballpark.
Fourth, maybe just acknowledge that the anchor is going to affect you and build in a pause. The pause is the cheapest countermeasure.
The pause is underrated. Even a few seconds of reflection, do I need this, would I buy it at the full RRP, am I buying the product or the discount, can break the anchor spell enough to make a better decision.
The RRP is a test of impulse control. If the discount is the main reason you're buying, step back.
That's harder than it sounds, because the discount feeling is pleasurable. There's a dopamine hit to getting a deal. The RRP harnesses that neurological response and directs it toward a purchase.
We're not just fighting marketing. We're fighting our own brains.
and the marketing is designed by people who understand those brains very well. The RRP is not an accident or a convention. It's a precision tool.
Let me ask one more thing. The prompt mentions that the RRP seems to be used primarily as a marketing tool by resellers. Is that fair? Or do manufacturers also benefit in ways we haven't covered?
Manufacturers benefit enormously. The RRP protects their brand positioning. If retailers were free to price however they wanted without a reference point, you'd get chaotic pricing that could damage the brand. A premium brand doesn't want its product showing up in a bargain bin, even if the retailer is the one taking the hit. The RRP says, this is what this thing is worth, even if you happen to be getting it for less.
The manufacturer is protecting the brand's dignity, while the retailer gets to play the hero, offering a discount. Everyone wins except the consumer who takes the RRP at face value.
That's the ecosystem, and it's stable because all the incentives align. The manufacturer wants brand protection. The retailer wants transaction utility. The consumer wants to feel smart. The RRP serves all three.
It's almost elegant. A fiction that works because everyone consents to it.
Consensual fiction is a good way to put it. The RRP persists not because anyone is fooled in a deep sense, but because it's useful to everyone involved. Even consumers who understand the game still enjoy playing it. The discount feels good. The anchor provides structure. The whole thing hums along.
Until supply and demand break the illusion. When the market price goes above the RRP, the consensus fractures. The retailer stops showing the RRP. The consumer feels aggrieved, and the whole thing is revealed as the arrangement of convenience it always was.
Scarcity is the truth serum for pricing. When there's not enough to go around, the RRP evaporates and you see the real market dynamics underneath. What's interesting is how quickly everyone adapts. The sneaker resale market doesn't even bother with the fiction. MSRP is just the entry price for the lottery, and the real market happens elsewhere.
The RRP as a fair weather anchor. Functional in normal conditions, abandoned in storms.
Which is probably the most honest thing about it. The fact that it's abandoned when inconvenient tells you it was never a measure of value. It was always a tool.
To answer the prompt directly, does the RRP hold value as an approximate estimate of worth? It holds value as an anchor, a coordination device, and a positioning signal. But, as an estimate of what something is worth, it's about as reliable as a weather forecast from a carnival barker.
On the second question, does below RRP pricing signal a loss leader or something more nuanced? It's almost always something more nuanced. The seller is still making margin in most cases. The discount is theater, but it's theater that creates real psychological value for the buyer and real profit for the seller. The loss leader exists, but it's the exception, not the rule, and it usually doesn't need an RRP comparison to do its job.
The next time I see a slash price and a big red discount percentage, I should translate it in my head. It's not, you're saving money. It's, the seller has chosen to make slightly less than the maximum they thought they could extract from you.
Even that framing might be generous. In many cases, the seller never expected to get the RRP. The discount was always the real price. The RRP was just there to make the real price feel like a victory.
The victory you didn't need to win, for the product you didn't need to buy, at the price the seller always intended to charge.
That's the pessimistic summary. The optimistic one is that the system does create genuine value in the form of transaction utility, and if you're going to buy the thing anyway, you might as well enjoy the discount feeling. Just don't mistake the feeling for a fact.
The RRP is basically the pumpkin spice latte of pricing. It doesn't actually taste like pumpkin, but people enjoy it anyway, and the enjoyment is real even if the pumpkin isn't.
That might be the most corn take on pricing theory I've ever heard.
I stand by it. Seasonal, overpriced, and built on a flavor we've all agreed to pretend exists.
The Pumpkin Spice RRP.
Available for a limited time. While supplies last, suggest in retail price your dignity.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the early medieval period, Hanseatic League merchants operating out of trading posts as far north as Labrador developed a strict rule that no trader could eat lunch alone. The Drittel Gesellschaft, or Third Society Ordinance, required meals to be shared among at least three merchants, allegedly so that price fixing could happen over salted fish without the appearance of conspiracy. This is the origin of the surname Drittel.
Lunch was a compliance meeting.
The Hanseatic League had mandatory team lunches. I feel seen.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want more episodes, you can find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We're produced by Hilbert Flumingtop, and we'll be back soon. Until then, maybe don't trust the sticker price.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.